Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, campus cronies. Welcome back to Campus Crime Chronicles. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Turner, higher education professional and true crime addict. In every episode of this podcast, I take a deep dive into some sort of true crime that occurred on a school campus or a crime that's associated with a college or university in some way. For each episode, I rate the seriousness of the crime from 1 to 5 on my serious crime scale, with 1 being completely not serious, possibly even a little humorous from time to time, to 5 being very serious. This episode is rated a 5. In 2004, the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, was rocked to its core when, in a matter of only a few months, not one but 2 female students were stalked and murdered by 2 different male students, the latter of which should have never been admitted to the college in the first place due to their criminal histories. On my last episode, I covered the murder of Kristen Najokes, the 2nd female to die at the hands of her stalker. Now, on this week's episode, I'm covering the story of the first student who was murdered, 18-year-old freshman Jessica Faulkner. This episode is titled, Obsession Leads to Murder. So without further ado, let's get started. Shortly after noon on May 5th, 2004, John Faulkner received a disturbing phone call. It was from a student at UNCW who went to school with his daughter, Jessica Faulkner. During the call, the student, Curtis Dixon, dropped a bombshell on John. Dixon proceeded to tell him that he, Dixon, had just killed Jessica. Now, to explain how we got to this life-shattering phone call, I need to go back to the beginning of the fall 2003 semester. That's when 18-year-old Jessica Faulkner and 20-year-old Curtis Dixon first became acquainted. They both moved into the same dormitory as freshmen at UNCW, and they were living on the same floor of Cornerstone Hall, a co-ed dorm on campus. Though the two weren't besties or anything like that, they did quickly become part of the same circle of friends who would often study together as a group, as well as watch movies together and go out to dinner. And almost just as quickly as they all became friends, Dixon became drawn to Jessica, like he developed an obvious crush on her. Jessica, however, had a boyfriend in Raleigh, and she was in no way interested in Dixon for more than just a friend. So at first, Jessica brushed it off, just treated it as a little crush, and she really thought she could handle it, although she did have to continuously reject his advances. But as the months went by, and fall turned into winter, and winter into spring, Dixon's crush only intensified. In fact, he developed an obsession. According to former UNCW police captain Charlie Willis, quote, "Somewhere along the way, Curtis began an obsession with Jessica, changed some classes to be near her, even enrolling in a summer trip to Belize, which Jessica had long been looking forward to, and now began to cause her concern," end quote. It was after this that Jessica started getting a little worried about Dixon's behavior. I mean, even though she made it perfectly clear to him that she wasn't interested in a romantic relationship at all, it didn't do any good. Dixon's behavior persisted. Soon enough, Jessica had told her parents and her boyfriend about Dixon, and she described him as quote-unquote creepy and a quote-unquote stalker. At one point, she was on the phone with her mom, Desiree Randolph, and Jessica told her that she was worried that Curtis may be standing outside listening. Desiree told ABC News, quote, "There were times I spoke to her in the dorm, and she'd say, 'Mom, I have to whisper because he might be right outside my door,'" end quote. According to an article in the News and Observer by Josh Schaefer, Jessica's friends became concerned about Dixon's stalking behavior as well, and at least one of her friends reported Dixon to a resident assistant who encouraged the friend to send Jessica to see her. Jessica never went, but the RA or some other staff person, source material wasn't really clear, but somebody did speak with Dixon, who promised to back off. Through it all, though, Jessica, being the kind and gentle person she was, still thought she could handle Dixon. She never in a million years thought he could be capable of harming her, or anyone for that matter. So she insisted on dealing with the situation herself, without getting campus police involved. Captain Willis explained, quote, "Through our interviews, we have learned that Jessica was a very gentle soul who preferred not to be confrontational. She was not one who would care to hurt anyone's feelings, even when she was uncomfortable," end quote. Unfortunately, however, Jessica's gentle soul was no match for the monster obsession of Dixon. It was the last day of the spring semester on May 4th, 2004. Dixon and Jessica and their group of friends all went out to dinner to celebrate the end of the year. Upon returning to campus, the friends went to Dixon's room to listen to music, play some video games. Basically, they just had an impromptu going away party because they were all packing and getting ready to leave campus the next day for summer break. According to the reporting of Patrick Gannon for the Wilmington Star News, the gathering dispersed at around 11 p.m. that night, but they all agreed to meet up again for breakfast before officially going their separate ways for the summer. A little later that night, however, Dixon started instant messaging Jessica and invited her back to his room. He said he had a gift that he wanted to give her. So, reluctantly, Jessica headed back to Dixon's dorm room. When she arrived, Dixon asked her to turn around so he could surprise her with the gift, which was a movie on DVD. As Jessica turned her back to Dixon, he went to his desk where both the DVD and a weapon, a blackjack, were laying. He later told police that it was in that moment that he decided whether to give her the gift as planned or to pick up the blackjack, which was described as a small bludgeon with a flexible handle. Captain Willis said, quote, "Curtis told me that he could have as easily given her the gift as picking up the weapon," end quote. And Dixon, well, he chose the weapon. He then struck her over the head with the blackjack and began strangling her. Desiree, reflecting on her daughter's last moments, said, quote, "That's when he hit her over the head. She was so tiny and he was huge and she just didn't have a chance," end quote. According to an Associated Press article, Dixon went on to rape Jessica after injecting her with a painkiller he had been given for dental work. He then placed her on his bed and bound her body before he himself climbed into his roommate's bed, who had already left for the summer. And that's where Dixon slept for the next 7 hours. When he woke up the next morning at about 10 a.m. on May 5th, he realized that Jessica was dead and that he had killed her. And y'all, what he did next is going to really piss you off, so brace yourselves. Remember how the group of friends were all supposed to meet up the next morning for breakfast? Well, Dixon left Jessica, her lifeless body, just lying in his bed while he proceeded to go to breakfast as planned. And when their friends asked where she was, Dixon told them that Jessica wouldn't be joining them because she was still packing. The Wilmington Star News reported that Dixon returned to his dorm room after breakfast and eventually called a friend in Raleigh to confess what he had done. And according to police documentation, Dixon also told another student in the dorm about the murder as well. But when that student didn't believe him, Dixon handed her the keys to his room and invited her to, quote-unquote, go see for yourself. She did, according to police documents, and then she started screaming. But as we know from the beginning of this story, those two people weren't the only ones to whom Dixon confessed his crime. Not only did he call his friend in Raleigh and tell the young lady in the dorm, but he also proceeded to call Jessica's father, John Faulkner. According to an article in the New York Post, John sprung into action trying to get more information, any information he possibly could, and he dialed 911. He told the operator, quote, "I've just received a phone call from one of her classmates saying he's murdered her," end quote. The 911 operator said, "Murdered her?" And John frantically replied, "Murdered her, yes." Then the operator asked if he had alerted campus police, and John explained that he had, but that he felt like nothing had really been done. He said, quote, "I have, twice. These people are not moving too quickly on this. I'd really like to get somebody involved. The campus police said they have people in the area looking for a suspect. I could give a damn about a suspect. I want to know what's the status of my daughter," end quote. And before long, John received the worst confirmation of his life, that his daughter had, in fact, been murdered at the hands of fellow student Curtis Dixon. You see, shortly after Dixon confessed to the fellow student in the dorm, an RA called campus police to report Jessica's death. Authorities responded to find Jessica exactly where Dixon had left her, in his room, in his bed. Authorities were also met by Dixon, who stated, quote, "I'm the one you're looking for," end quote. He was then apprehended on the spot and taken to the campus police station. According to the Wilmington Star News, the investigation that followed involved multiple agencies, including the UNCW police, the New Hanover County Sheriff's Department, the District Attorney's Office, and the State Bureau of Investigation. When they searched Dixon's room, they found duct tape, a hypodermic needle filled with hydrocodone, the blackjack, as well as a knife and a stun gun. Then, at around 2:30 p.m. that day, on May 5th, 2004, Captain Willis formally interviewed Dixon, who relayed the sequence of events and described his relationship with Jessica. He told Captain Willis that he and Jessica were friends, but that he wanted more and he felt put off by her. He also said that he had purchased the blackjack, as well as the knife, the stun gun, and roll of duct tape, because he had originally intended to use it in a murder plot against Jessica's boyfriend in Raleigh, whose name has never been publicly released. So essentially, Jessica was not his first intended target, although it did appear that murder in some form was premeditated. And it was actually in this interview that Dixon admitted to Captain Willis that he had made the split-second decision to use the blackjack on Jessica, you know, instead of giving her the DVD, or instead of going to Raleigh to find her boyfriend. The Wilmington Star News reported that Dixon also agreed to a videotaped reenactment of the murder, which was done in a police department conference room. And according to investigation reports, Dixon told police that when he realized he had killed Jessica, he thought about coming out of his room with a knife to force police officers to kill him. Then, during the formal interview, Dixon also asked an investigator, quote, "Will you do me a favor and shoot me? If it was your daughter, wouldn't you kill me?" end quote. Following the interview, confession, and taped reenactment, Dixon was charged with first-degree murder, rape, sexual assault, and kidnapping. And although exactly when Jessica died was unclear, an autopsy confirmed what Dixon had already confessed to. The cause of death was determined to be suffocation due to strangulation.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day.
With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Upon hearing the news of their daughter's murder, Jessica's parents were, as expected, utterly devastated. Jessica's mother, Desiree, told Josh Schaefer with the News and Observer that she had been anxiously awaiting her daughter to return home for summer break. Desiree said, quote, "I spoke with her for a long time on the phone the night before she was to come home, and she was bubbling over with joy. I missed her so much and couldn't wait to see her," end quote. In the subsequent investigation that followed, police discovered a bunch of alarming information about Curtis Dixon. For starters, 20-year-old Dixon had previously served an 11-day stint in the U.S. Navy that ended when he was discharged for homicidal and suicidal tendencies. But on his application to UNCW, he marked no when it asked if he was a military veteran. Also, according to ABC News, Dixon didn't mention in his UNCW application that he had withdrawn from two other schools in the UNC system after facing certain expulsion. At UNC Charlotte, he had been reprimanded for fighting, and at North Carolina School of the Arts, he brandished a knife, after which school officials there recommended an immediate and complete psychological evaluation of Dixon, in part because he had stalked and harassed a fellow student. And, mind you, these were all facts that UNCW never knew about. Desiree, Jessica's mom, said, quote, "If you're putting a 20-year-old into a dorm with freshmen, with 17-year-old girls, where's he been? Why is he just now a freshman? I mean, that should have been a red flag," end quote. But wait, that's not all. Apparently, according to the Wilmington Star News, Dixon's father, James E. Dixon III, was, at the time, working as an assistant to the chancellor at UNC Charlotte. In April of 2003, James Dixon contacted UNCW on behalf of his son to ask if it was too late for his son to apply to UNCW for the 2003 through 2004 academic year. And he was simply advised to fax a copy of his son's homeschooling transcript to the admissions office and complete an enrollment application, which he did. So, according to the Wilmington Star News, Curtis was accepted to UNCW in part because of his homeschooling transcript that indicated his grades had improved every year and that he completed high school graduation requirements in June 2001 and received nearly all A's, of which his father was the sole administrator. Curtis also scored a 1070 on the SAT, which fell within the range of most students admitted to UNCW that year. And according to school records, Curtis Dixon was admitted to UNCW on April 28, 2003. The thing is, it wasn't until after the murder of Jessica Faulkner that UNCW officials discovered that Dixon was only partially homeschooled, which was in no way indicated on his application. The Wilmington Star News reported that for parts of 3 years of his high school education, Dixon attended Vance High School in Charlotte, where his attendance was rather spotty. Additionally, his application never mentioned the other two UNC system schools that he attended either. Plus, and bear with me, similar to the John Peck situation, you know, in the last Chronicle, Peck was the former UNCW student who harassed, stalked, and murdered his ex-girlfriend, UNCW student Kristen Najokes. But similar to that, Curtis Dixon never indicated on his application that he had been convicted of a crime other than minor traffic violations, despite having a misdemeanor larceny conviction from a couple years earlier. So, after all this information was discovered, the UNCW chancellor at the time, Dr. Rosemary DiPaolo, said Dixon likely would have not been accepted to the school if several pieces of information had not been omitted from or falsely reported on his enrollment application. Dr. DiPaolo said, quote, "Given these numerous discrepancies, had they known at the time, I doubt Curtis Dixon would have been admitted to UNCW," end quote. But for Jessica's family, that answer's just not fair. Desiree told ABC News, quote, "I was under the impression that when you apply for college, they checked you thoroughly. Who's going to say, yes, who's a felon? Who's going to say, yes, I'm a known rapist, I'm a stalker," end quote. So naturally, as word spread about both Jessica's murder on campus and Kristen's murder off campus, UNCW faced a lot of heat and pressure from worried parents and community members about the school's application process. The Wilmington Star News reported that the murders and the community concerns prompted the UNC system to recommend significant changes to admissions policies and to look more closely at stalking issues and overall campus safety. Dr. DiPaolo said, quote, "Becoming a model for campus safety is what we must aim for, to bring some good from the tragedy of young lives cut so tragically short," end quote. According to the News and Observer, the UNC system ignited a series of security reforms, which included a campus safety task force that recommended three primary things. This consisted of 1, required character references for prospective UNC system students; 2, stern warnings to applicants about consequences of lying about their criminal pasts; and 3, limited background checks for those whose history raises red flags. The task force also recommended that UNCW offer more violence prevention programs. Jessica's mom, Desiree, said she hoped the changes would prevent any further needless deaths. Thinking about Jessica, Desiree said, quote, "My daughter was a very special young woman, still a child at heart and so innocent. She had so much love to give and such a promising future. She wanted to travel the world to see exotic places and people," end quote. Now, briefly, I want to shift back to Curtis Dixon and the investigation of Jessica's murder. According to the reporting of Martha Quillen for the News and Observer, prosecutors announced in June of 2004 that they would seek the death penalty. District Attorney Ben David said that because the homicide was committed in the process of carrying out other violent crimes, kidnapping, sexual assault, and rape, the killing was considered especially heinous, atrocious, or cruel. Therefore, the state needed to find only one of 11 aggravated circumstances defined by state law to seek the death penalty, which applied in this case. The thing is, though, the DA was never able to seek justice in the court system because Dixon took justice, if that's what you want to call it, into his own hands. In December of 2004, 7 months after Jessica's murder, Dixon leaped to his death from a high staircase at the Polk Youth Institution. And obviously, that put a screeching halt to the death penalty case against him. As the spring semester at UNCW came to a close in May 2004, the campus clock tower tolled 18 times, once for each year of Jessica's short life. Jessica Faulkner was born on September 24, 1985, in Fontana, California. According to her obituary in the Asheville Citizen Times, she was described as a kind, thoughtful, and considerate young woman who was a voracious reader and dreamer of ancient ruins and faraway places, which is why she was so excited for that trip to Brazil that she had signed up for her freshman year at UNCW. It wasn't until 1993 that Jessica and her family moved from California to North Carolina, where Jessica later attended high school in Cary, North Carolina, and became an honor roll student. After high school, once she began classes at UNCW, Jessica studied anthropology and achieved sophomore status during her freshman year. She was a highly creative, gifted artist who, quote, "made the world a better place by her mere existence," end quote. She was a peaceful and giving soul who will forever be loved and constantly missed. Okay, y'all, that officially brings us to the end of Chronicle 84. As always, be sure to check out my social media where I post photos associated with each case and episode. You can find me at Campus Crime Chronicles on both Facebook and Instagram. Or you can follow my personal account on Instagram, which is at Nicole K. Lynn. That's NicoleK. Kaylynn. Okay, well, that's all for today, so bye for now. Campus Crime Chronicles is researched, written, and recorded by me, Nicole Turner. Campus crony Alexis McDonald is my research assistant, and Giari Gassaway is my editor and producer. Tune in again in 2 weeks for the next Chronicle.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.